This guy had just finished making love with a girl. "I'm sorry," he said. "If I'd known you were a virgin, I'd have taken more time." "But honey," she says, "if I'd known you had more time, I would have taken my panties off."
You're right, Roberto.
She met a guy like you. Now she's dead.
You should believe in ghosts, P-Brain.
He's a closet.
Don't hurt me, please.
Don't keep me waiting for those onions, Herman.
This is all the whiskey you possess?
Everyone out of the way of the bulldozer.
1, 2, 3, go.
Oh, shit.
Yo.
Start that again.
Sure. 1, 2, 3, go.
Go.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I was just zoning.
My Gioia has a first name. It's G-R-A-N-D-I. That doesn't work.
You know, Gioia is how everyone pronounces Giallo until they hear somebody else say it.
That's like how I used to say creamy. I just kept reading the word creamy, and then finally I was like, man, that word sounds like shit. And Leanna's like, I think it's creamy. And I'm like, oh, thank God. But Brad yeah. And I, privately, we still call it creamies.
Well, Germans are the creamiest.
Anyway, hello and welcome to Hello, This is the Doomed Show. I am Richard. Folks, I am joined by a mostly nude, but tastefully so, Jeffrey. Hello, Jeffrey.
You may refer to me as Sabrina.
You can call me Flora, because I'm a meanie.
You can call me Cappuccino, which I think is her name.
Jeffrey Cappuccino.
Yeah.
Nice. Folks, if it isn't completely not totally obvious to you, we are talking about the one, the only, Lambava.
The Molam Bava, Mo Better.
A.K.A. Lamberto Bava's Delirium, : Photos of Gioia's, : from 1987.
Photos of Gioia's, : Eyeball, :
Behead.
Mo Better.
Folks, this is a freaking listener request from our good pal Mark. Thank you, Mark, for contributing to the show. Jeffrey and I had actually wrapped up talking about every film ever.
Yeah, so we're done. We're done.
We didn't know this one was a movie. Neither did Serena Grant.
Yeah, not. I don't think there are some people on the set of this film who are unconvinced.
They're gonna find out though. So yeah, 1987 was a very interesting time for Italian horror. You basically had three directors making stuff that were like making money and getting overseas sales, like Demons and Opera and Creepers, aka Phenomena. You had some other stuff like that, but then you had like the down, what's the word for an avalanche? An avalanche of badness for the Giallo. The Giallo had hit a little bit of a saturation point, about 12 years before this movie came out.
Yeah, you might say the Giallo fell down an escalator.
The Giallo got a behead. So, like, I love this, like, last little gasp of the I'm not even going to say classic era of I just love this era of giallo.
It is an era, yes.
They tend to be a little overly sleazy. Some of them are just straight up pornos. Mm-hmm. This one is not one of the pornos, but it it has a person who was in a porno or two, maybe more. But yeah, it's just this is just something that happened.
I mean, the thing that sets them apart more than anything is, of course, the late 80s aesthetic. I mean, it's so radically different from what you see in the early 70s productions. And I feel like it's even distinct from what you saw earlier in the decade. Like, you know, just looking at Lamberto's filmography again, like A Blade in the Dark has a totally different vibe than this.
Big time.
which is just a handful of years later. This is a weird position in Bava's filmography. It's kind of like the last... Well, I haven't seen Demons 3 the Ogre yet.
Oh, boy, that's real bad. But I love it.
Yeah, it feels like kind of a last hurrah, though it's not like he stopped working. You know, we've got Body Puzzle, which is like this, but even more so later on. But like a little, you know, not as garish as this one. Mm-hmm. You know, 90s, a new decade, things have changed.
Yes.
But then also, like, we covered Demons 5, of course, The Mask of Satan on this podcast. That one's crazy, too. But this one, I think it's kind of like, it's a pinnacle. It's coming right on the hot on the heels of Demons 2. And it's just a lot of excess, a lot of ogling. with like our big singular round eye, we are ogling this trashy joya.
Mm-hmm. So 87, right? Like you said, right after Demons 2, which, you know, that was another moderate success for him. He did three things that I can tell. He did this and he worked on a series called Turno di Notte. I can't find any episodes. I found one, but I don't think he directed it. And then he worked on the Brevido Giallo movies. He did four films from 87 to 89, including Graveyard Disturbance, which I still haven't seen, Until Death, which I have seen, and The Ogre, which, of course, Demons 3 The Ogre, which is something I adore. And he did something called Dinner with a Vampire, which I'm not real big on the comedies with Italy, so I've been kind of putting it off, although I think it's George Hilton.
Wow.
Is a vampire.
These sound great. I mean...
George Hilton.
And these are full-length films, too.
Yes, so it's a little confusing, because they say TV, but they're definitely went straight to video or some shit.
I gotta check these out. Were the ones you saw good?
Yeah, they're definitely... I need to see Graveyard Disturbance. I keep forgetting to watch it. Demons 3 the Ogre is... I don't defend it, because it's real silly, but it feels like them poking fun at House by the Cemetery. Mm-hmm. And making fun of Fulci specifically. Mm-hmm. But there's also, they make fun of Dario Argento in it. And it's just a little dull, but otherwise I adore it because it's totally stupid. Man, you know,
I just want to like take a day and watch all of these Brevido Giallos. Is the Ogre the same as Demons 3 the Ogre?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, it just has two entries because of its titling. Yeah,
gotcha. Yeah. And like how it was released. Gotcha. Okay.
Bully. So I couldn't find a proper trailer for this thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to drop the opening music.
Oh, yeah.
Because folks at home, if you haven't seen this yet, by the way, we're going to spoil it. It's a giallo, so all the plot's going to be ruined. This opening music is the greatest thing ever. If this doesn't get you hyped for something, then you have nothing.
The one, the only Simon Boswell, the Boz.
The Boz. Dude, he's my Boz. I want to freaking collect my paychecks from him. I love the Boz.
He's so good that I bought the Stage Fright soundtrack on vinyl recently, and I listened to it, and it was so good that I wasn't even mad that the sort of iconic saxophone theme from the beginning is not on it, which
is weird.
Apparently, I think I tried to do a little research. I think that one was like a collaboration between him and some other people. So I think maybe that's why it was left off. Maybe like rights issues. But it was so good. It didn't even really, well, it still hurt a little bit, but not that much. The Boz is great. Love that Boz.
I was thinking this was a film mirage because of the presence of George Eastman. But no, this is not, you know, there's no Joe D'Amato. So there's no George Eastman.
Messed that up. Hello.
There is George Eastman, but there's no Joe D'Amato, so we don't get a film that's just a mirage of a film.
No, instead it's a Medusa film, which is weird because you'd think it'd be a Cyclops film.
Some other mythical being. Yeah. It's freaking great. The plot synopsis I'm going to read to you is I did something special. I didn't want to just, you know, do the normal thing. So I found the Spanish VHS tape and then I translated it into English.
Nice.
And here is what it says on the back. Thank you, Google, for helping this happen. They are now our sponsor. So cue the Google bucks and the Google Bitcoin. Pussycat is one of the magazine's erotic bestsellers of moment. Its owner and director receives continuous and Flora's unpleasant pressures to sell the business. At the same time, a series of terrible murders of Joss Magazine and People Models A / Legacies to N, Isma, whose culmination is reception by couple of the director of a photo of each of the corpses before a poster of it. Growing intrigue creates situations of great tension leading to the most classic terror from the hand of that great genre master who is Lamberto Bava, with a little an extra accent on the A there. One more incentive of this film is contemplate Sabrina as one of the models posing for Pussycat, and it will have the tragic end than her companions.
That's it?
That's it.
So I would say that that is actually probably one of the more accurate synopses that we've ever encountered on the back of a slab of plastic.
Yeah, why isn't that on IMDb? Come on.
Yeah, right. Well, you can update it.
What I should have done is translated it into Japanese from the Spanish and then into English. And then just keep going.
Yeah, you know, I think it's fine. I think you did it.
All right, I'm going to close that Google search. I won't do it right now while you're waiting. What you need to know about this film is that we get nudity in the first second of the film. Serena Grandi of Anthropophagus and of the political party that Mussolini's like granddaughter started.
What?
Yeah, she had some strange political leanings. It was so weird.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, she was in Anthropophagus. She was definitely very different in that film. She was a mom, so they had her very mom-like, of course, because of her measurements, because Serena Grandi is a very voluptuous actress, almost mind-bogglingly so. Of course, she was in a Tinto Brass movie, maybe multiple Tinto Brass movies. I don't know. I keep getting offers to review Tinto Brass movies, and I say, no thanks.
Listen, I only got so much time for butts.
Butts and big old boobies. Hooray. Was his new movie like P.O. Box Tinto Brass or something?
He just gives you his P.O. Box number. It's just flashed on screen next to a butt for an hour and 30 minutes. Hours and 30 minutes.
I would actually think the post office has to regularly fumigate P.O. Box Tinto Brass's freaking P.O. Box.
She's also in... Luigi Cozzi's The Adventures of Hercules. with Lou Ferrigno.
Oh my god. I knew there was another reason to watch that. I just still haven't gotten around to it.
And she's pretty low build, but
I've heard that movie's crazy.
Yeah, they're pretty nuts.
But in this movie, she plays freaking Gioia, but I'm going to call her Gloria because of the English dub.
Yeah.
Which is magnificent, by the way.
Yes.
She's Gloria, so we're going to call her Gloria for this.
I might alternate. We'll see.
Hey, we got to mix it up. We're at a photo shoot with David Brandon, who plays a photographer named Roberto, our, dare I say, red fish herring man of the movie. I love David Brandon so much. He was in frickin' Stage Fright. We played the jerky director. He was also in...
You may recognize him as second unit director of 102 Dalmatians.
Really? He was actually a director in real life?
Second unit director.
But still, hey, that's...
Hey, man, that's cool. That's
good for him. No, I just love his voice. I think he actually is... He's not Italian. He's British.
Oh, really?
Because I believe that's his real voice in Stage Fright.
And that is his real name. Mm. So, okay. David Brandon.
I like him.
English.
So he's doing a photo shoot and he's, given directions. Meanwhile,
God. His directions are so good, though. All right. I wrote some of them down.
Yes, please.
I feel like I wrote a lot of dialogue down and left it unattributed, but I feel like much of it comes from Roberto. here's what I managed to get down. I think this is all verbatim. I may have embellished. Let's see. Caress her, girls. Act like you love it. And laugh. Keep laughing. All of you. Remember, you want to be possessed. Make it sexier. Surrender to pleasure.
That sounds like all Brandon to me.
Yeah, I couldn't write dialogue that good.
I think you could. You just need to workshop it with a friend.
All right.
We get to see another guy helping out. He's a splasher. His name is Tony, and he's played by someone named Vonnie Corbellini. And Tony is the younger brother of our main character, Gloria. This guy acted a lot. He had 55 credits. I do not recognize anything. It's like, if you weren't in Argento's films, bro, I don't recognize you, okay?
Who are you?
He has the most unfortunate perm of the movie. But he's just splashing water on the models and encouraging them to be sexy, too.
Is it him or is it Roberto who has the unfortunate waders on in this scene?
That's Roberto, I believe.
Roberto, okay. Yeah. Yes. He doesn't want to get wet.
That's in his freaking contract with the film. Is like, I can't get my legs wet.
No.
Can't get my legs wet.
They would shrink and wither if they did. Oh, actually, I got to point this out. The actor who plays Tony is in some movies that are very important to me.
Oh, tell me more.
Some films by the director Peter Greenaway. He's in The Belly of an Architect in the same year as Delirium with Brian Dennehy. And in the next year, he's in another, Drowning by Numbers, which is another really fantastic Peter Greenaway movie.
Now, that one I've heard of.
Yeah. They're both awesome. I mean, every Peter Greenaway movie is awesome, but these ones are particularly awesome. Check them out.
Now, he's the vegetarian director.
Peter Greenaway?
Yeah, because of his name, he doesn't eat meat.
Well, his actors eat each other sometimes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. A lot of murder and mayhem, a lot of blood.
Oh, I'll look into them. I do not know his filmography at all.
Oh my God, they're amazing. Yeah, he's a very stagey art film director, and that all of his compositions, both they look like paintings, but they sort of play out in a sort of static framed way, like you're watching something on stage. Just immaculately detailed, very strange. I think you dig him, honestly.
That sounds familiar. Did he do that one with Nicole Kidman?
I don't believe so. No. I mean, his most famous is The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty representative of his work.
I was thinking of Dogtown.
Oh, no, that's
Dogville.
No, that's Lars von Trier.
Dogs Are Us.
Dogs Are, We Bought a Dog.
Hey, Lars von Trier, he's cool, right?
Oh, no.
well-known cool guy.
Well-known
sweetheart, Lars von Trier.
Well, he's actually, his new credit is just Dick Bagel.
So, meanwhile, this whole fashion shoot's going on. We got Mark the Peeper. We got a wheelchair-bound gentleman named Mark, who's played by Carl Zinni.
Oh, I really thought it was Richard Ramirez.
No, this guy bathes. No.
I guess so. His hair looks very fluffy.
Richard Ramirez. That's the biggest takeaway I got from reading about him was that he smelled really bad. Because he was not a fan of bathing.
Yeah, yeah.
Loved crack cocaine, though. So, Carl Zinni is from good old Demons.
Yeah.
And that's the one I always thought he was in. He's also in Graveyard Disturbance. But I thought we saw him in the Mask of Satan, the one, the Demons 5 we talked about. But he's not in that. I just kept thinking he was.
Weird.
He's hilarious in this. He should be in all movies.
Oh, yeah. He's good. He's creepy as shit.
Yes. Yeah. So he's peeping with a telescope, but he's not looking at the models. He has got his eyes on Serena Grandi, Gloria here. The thing about... this photo shoot is they're recreating famous pictures that Gloria did in her heyday when she was a Playboy style model,
which she seems very ashamed of, right? Doesn't she like? Aren't the photos like they're like hidden now?
Nobody has access to them. They're like locked down.
Yeah, which is weird. Like, how did she get famous off of this thing that now nobody has access to?
Weird. We see her sitting by the pool at a safe distance, so she's not getting splashed. She's sitting there talking to her pal Evelyn, played by Daria Nicolodi, who is still in that period of the 80s where she should have fired her stylist. She's not as bad as she looks in frickin' Paganini Horror, but she just needed to fire her stylist, whoever was dressing her and doing her hair.
I mean, here's the, like, you know, if you're looking for a Daria Nicolodi joint, this is not it, unfortunately.
No.
This is in her in the mode of, like, I'm here and I'm gone. Bye.
Yes.
Which is like, funny. At least in Paganini, she's in it, you know.
She's actually a character.
Yeah.
In this, she's one of the many red herrings. Mm. What I like about this, though, is it reminds me of how, let's just use a nice word, we'll say frumpy. In frickin' Argento's opera, because he wanted her to look as terrible as possible on film, which one of the trivia pieces about this film is that Dario Argento was supposed to direct this, after some script changes, he bailed and let good old Lambaba do it.
The Mo Lambaba, Mo Better.
God, you know what? In 87, I don't know. Did Bava do this better than Argento would have?
I think as far as they're just so different. It would be so different. I would not trade this movie for anything. But I would love to be in the other timeline to see Argento's vision for this freaking movie. It would definitely be his most sexual film. Like, weird.
Yeah, but he's like weird about sex stuff, so it would probably be just like more hateful about
it'd be
sexuality.
More women, yeah, it'd be more women's heads going through glass windows. So Mark calls, and he's really obscene. He says some horrible shit to Gloria, and she just puts up with it because she pities him.
I would say that he says like weird, pathetic stuff. Like he's like, if I told you I was playing with something, would you come help me? And I think he means his telescope, which, I mean, he seems like he's handling it fine. But he also has this absolutely baffling line where he says, "Please put out my fire." That's like the opposite of what you want when you're like, you know, you're a little randy. Hey, you want to flame the fire.
You want a burning sensation in a relationship.
Listen, please smolder my embers.
Oh, baby. That's how Jeffrey auditioned for the podcast, with that very line reading just now.
Let me help you. Gloria.
Oh, hello, Mark.
I'm watching you.
You are?
Yes, and I'm going crazy.
If I told you I was playing with it,
would you come over and help me? No, don't be angry. It's not true. Don't hang up. I just have to tell you how beautiful you are today. More than usual.
Are you wearing your panties now?
No, don't pull down your skirt. You don't know how much pleasure I get just watching you. Don't you want to let me see you in the nude? I'd be forever grateful.
Listen, Mark. You've been watching a show right under your window that isn't so bad.
Be happy with that, huh?
You're not like those others, Gloria. You could put out my fire, all right.
You're a sex goddess. You make my member throb with desire. He wants to penetrate your flower and explode.
This is getting boring, Mark. And you're not very funny.
We cut to a scene of dinner time. Evelyn has made food for everybody, and it's Roberto, Tony, Evelyn, and this model. I believe the model's name is this Kim? This is Kim, the model. And Tony, okay, first of all, this joke. We come in the middle of a joke. Roberto's telling this hideous joke that doesn't make a lick of sense.
So we don't hear the entirety of the joke.
Right.
Okay. Because I felt like I had zoned out and just missed the beginning. So I just wrote down the dialogue from the end of it and then the response to it. And it was baffling.
Yes. But we get this terrible joke. I'll play the audio so you can hear this awesome punchline. And then immediately, frickin' Tony is really catty. There's a lot of catty frickin' characters in this movie. But Tony is... They compliment Evelyn on her cooking. And then Tony's like, "Well, everything Evelyn does is perfect." And everyone just stops and is like really quiet. Like they're really ashamed of how fucking stupid he is. Oh my god. But the only thing scary so far in the movie... is the decor in Gloria's friggin' house. What? This, like, I actually wrote, and I would never write this now, in my review for this frickin' movie, I wrote that it was dated. Like, I actually wrote, like, I would never even say that now because it's such a, like, this movie's really dated. Of course it was dated. It's frickin' 30 years old, goofball. But, like, I couldn't resist saying it because of the fashions and because of this horrible decor and the hair and the music. It's pleasantly dated because it literally came out and it came out on a date. So technically all films are dated.
I mean, I would describe all of the furniture in our home as furniture designed to kill you if you like stub your toe on it.
This was like my parents' house. My parents bought a house. They were very excited to buy a really nice house in Palm Beach, of all places. And they bought the model house. Pre-furnished. We got rid of all of our cool old 70s furniture and got the model house in, God, this might have been 88 or 89. So the entirety of our house was like four colors. White, seafoam green, gold, silver, mauve. So it's like five colors. And it was horrifying. The whole house, everything was gold or freaking mauve.
Dude, oh boy.
It looked like Ivanka Trump exploded. Not Ivanka. Damn it, I made the wrong reference.
Ivana.
What was his ex-wife? The one from the 80s?
Ivana Trump.
Was that right? Ivana?
Yeah.
Oh, damn it.
That's why she's called
I want to get this. It ain't Marla Maples' house.
No, Ivana.
The good old days. Kim, the model, and frickin' Gloria are hanging out, and they're talking about Carlo. I changed genders for him. That's the dead husband of Gloria, and he died in a horrible accident because he had to prove that he could go 200 kilometers per hour for some reason.
Yeah, he was overcompensating for something.
Dude, I mean, I would want to show off for Serena Grandi. I would be like, yo, look, I'm a podcaster, bro. And she'd be like,
yo, cool. Look, I could drive this podcast at 200 miles an hour.
Just need more coffee. And then like crash and burn. But while they're talking, they put on some badass music on the stereo. And they're just chilling. And all of a sudden, outside, the lights start going funny colors. And we get something very exciting to yours truly. And is becoming a theme on this show lately. A swimming pool at night. Mm. Man. Mm. I just love swimming pool at night. I don't know what it is about that. It's like something comforting in the movie. I just really love it.
I mean, personally, I don't, just because, I mean, since we last watched it, I'm just afraid that if I go too near a pool at night, Stefania Stella is going to pop out and, I don't know, sing at me, I guess.
I hope she does. She'll serenade you. We get some rock music. Simon Boswell steps on the rock setting on his frickin' synthesizer. And then we see Kim, who's going home. She's walking to her car, walking by the pool. We see that she's transmogrified into Eyeball Head.
Eyeball Head. Classic Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles villain, Eyeball Head. Yep.
Man, this is like the scene in the movie. This is how Lamberto Bava, I didn't watch enough of the interview, but I did get the idea that he was really bored with working with the Giallo in the Giallo genre, so he wanted to do something weird. So he tried to mix things up by having these crazy makeup effects, one of them being this freaking eyeball head.
I mean, I think this is really the one. Like, it's an entire mood, because you're right. It's around a night pool, which is like the most atmospheric thing you can imagine in the 80s. So there she is, clop, clop, clopping around the pool, smoking out her eye slit.
Yes.
And then she gets pitchforked. And you know what? It's finally at that point that she lived up to her promise and started making waves when she fell into the pool as a corpse.
I want to take one of the pop songs from frickin' Manhunter and just kind of take all the shots of her with the eyeball head just walking around the pool and just run them on a loop for that entirety of those crazy pop songs that are just so frickin' prominent in Manhunter.
And just intercut it with that iconic shot of Will Graham just on the beach staring straight ahead in close up.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect.
It's so cool. So yeah, she gets forked, and you're making waves. That was great. Mine forked. That was too easy. So Mark witnesses this murder, or did he? And he calls Gloria to report the murder, and she, of course, is skeptical, but she goes out to check the pool as it's raining, and her very sheer dress gets completely soaked, and we get one of many peaks at Serena's Grandies, like we do on Hello, This is the Doom Show.
This is a one-entrant wet nightgown contest. Yeah. She wins.
And she wins.
Yeah.
She gets really mad at him because she doesn't find the body. And, dude, she says a line I had to go back for like four times. I believe she screams, "Sit on you," at him. Is that what she says? Like, sit on you.
Maybe it's shit on you.
But it doesn't sound like shit on you. That's the funny thing.
Also, he'd probably like that. So that's
he's not really kinky.
Yeah.
He is kinky. Man, Mark is great.
Sit on you.
He does give her an important detail.
Oh, what's that?
The killer had long blonde hair. Oh, so right away, our Evelyn alarms are sounding.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to piece this together later, folks, because when you finally get a chance to see our killer in their full regalia, I've got some comments on that. It's great. The next day at the office, we meet Flora the Shark. This is at the Pussycat office.
I think this is the first time that
Gloria
we're told
runs shit.
Yeah, we're told this. I think this is the first time that we're told that this is that the magazine is called Pussycat.
Yeah, we actually see a copy of it, and we're like, oh, brother.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we thought that this was like a high fashion thing, but no, this is just like the Italian Hustler.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So Flora is played by Cappuccine, one of those amazing. She's a cup of coffee. One of those awesome one-named people. She's kind of an it girl in the 60s and 70s. I want to say I saw her in something Jean Roland. Did she do a Jean Roland movie?
That'd be interesting.
I guess. No. Well, she's in Fellini's Satyricon, which is a film I am very fond of.
She's in What's New, Pussycat?
Oh,
she's
classic.
She's in The
classic.
Pink Panther.
Holy shit. So yeah, I gotta look this up. I have been mixing her up with someone. Who's the one that climbs out of the clock in frickin' Shiver of the Vampires? Who the heck was that? Oh, that was, I think, Dominique. So another one-named person.
One-namer.
Yeah, one-namer. I'm just making movie references.
Oh, most important of all, she was in a 1985 season one episode of Murder, She Wrote, episode 14.
I've seen that. Yes, I've seen that. Thank you for catching that.
Directed by John Llewellyn Moxey, who is a great TV director who did a lot of cool horror films for TV.
I love it. He did indeed. Man, thank you. That's great.
Wow, that's cool.
We watch a lot of Murder, She Wrote in this house. So Flora, the biatch, she wants to buy a Pussycat from Gloria, and she's being a real dickweed about it. And I wrote in my notes, meow, hiss, meow, cat fight. Well, the only person cattier than Tony is Flora. Flora is incredible as this cat lady. And this whole exchange I wrote in my notes is amazing.
Someone describes Gloria at some point, it might be Flora, as being, quote, so provincial.
Oh, yes. She's constantly trying to remind Gloria of her meager beginnings as a country bumpkin who became a porn star. Or like a, because it is intimated that she was in porn movies and that she was just posing for all these naughty magazines and stuff. Yeah. And she met Carlo, her 200 kilometer per hour husband, and he basically made her a legit person in the eyes of high society. But Flora is there to remind her, girl, you suck. And it's fucking brilliant. I love it.
This is in my part of the notes for like this section, and I didn't actually like note it very well, so I'm not sure if it comes here or sometime later, but it seems like a Flora thing to say. I'm probably wrong, but you never know. But it's such a good quote, it's worth mentioning.
Yes, please.
Someone, maybe Flora, says, quote, "The hate of a woman can be very bad."
Yes.
Which, you know, that old saying.
That sounds like Flora. That's so Flora. Oh my god. We cut to the killer dragging the body of Kim, the model, and the killer poses it in front of a giant pull-down projector screen, except it's a giant print of this infamous picture of Gloria they were recreating in the beginning. And they poses the corpse, takes a photo, and then it's going to be sending them out, but only to Gloria.
This is, we have this type of scene recur a couple times in the movie, and it's pretty cool. It's very moody, well edited, lots of like quick cuts, also like a really cool soundtrack cue by the Boz in the sequence. So cool. Yeah, it's nice. Bava got a little bit of style here. A little bit.
I should say this was based on a story by Luciano Martino, the brother of Sergio Martino, who worked a lot. He's a producer and not as much of a writer. He was definitely a story guy. But the screenplay was co-written by Gianfranco Clerici, I believe I'm butchering that properly, and Daniel Stroppa. He wrote Phantom of Death.
Yeah.
He wrote the freaking wonderful Devil Fish.
Holy moly.
Which is hilarious. He wrote good old Miami Golem.
Jesus. Five Women for the Killer. Another one we did.
Dude.
He did the screenplay for Don't Torture a Duckling.
What?
And the bloodstained butterfly. Holy Dude. Moly. This, hey, there's some good stuff here.
The only thing missing from all giallos is long courtroom scenes.
But, House on the Edge of the Park. New York Ripper.
What? So Daniel Stropa, he also worked a lot. He wrote Voices from Beyond and Wax Mask. Zombie 5, Killing Birds, Witchery. God, these guys are just writing our show.
I know.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Responsible for a lot.
I think Zombie 5, Killing Birds was the one with the, it's a generator. Looks like it's been here for centuries. Man. In the context of the screenplay, it was meant to be a joke. Voice actor? I mean, well, he had a voice. He was also an actor. When he said it, it was not a joke anymore. That's beautiful. Anyway, I'm getting excited. So Gloria comes home from the office to find that Evelyn has found the photos. They've been delivered, and she is shook. Or as they say in Italy, she's shooken.
Shaken, not scared, shaken.
And so they call the cops, and we get the detective. This is Inspector Corsi. Played by Lino Salem, or Salome, I'm not sure. Another dude from the Demons movie. He was Ripper. He was the guy doing cocaine off of that girl's breasts. Ripper. He was also the security guard in Demons 2. Oh, man, he's very...
So he really, like, reformed between Demons films, right?
Yeah, he cleaned up, went to rehab, got a job. He was also in frickin' Sweet House of Horrors as the burglar, which is
Demonia too. Oh, and my. Maybe most humorously, The Passion of the Christ as Accuser.
I think he played Judas. I think you'll find he played Judas. No, they make fun of this detective because he looks like a hood and not a cop. That's really funny. I could not get over that joke. It's funny.
I'm laughing.
I can hear you. So he questions Evelyn, and he questions Gloria about these photos and what the, you know, their relationship to Kim. And Evelyn just glaring at him, giving him the stink eye the whole time. And then the next day, a news vendor putting out these copies of Pussycat featuring the dead Kim actually finds her body in the frickin' dumpster right as he's put out the issues.
Oopsie.
He gets interviewed by a frickin' TV guy who's like, how did you feel? He's like, I was shocked. I was kind of sick. But damn, her corpse was hot. He didn't say that.
Yeah.
So Gloria and everybody's frickin' watching the news and being appalled by the discovery of Kim's corpse. And Mark calls to congratulate Gloria on her success. She gets so pissed off. Hangs up on him. And then right after that, Evan is like, bro, we got to order more copies of this issue, man.
Come on, Gloria. Exploit the murder, honey. Come on.
We see Flora. Her bitchy competitor hanging out with one of her ladies. It might be her secretary. I'm not sure. Flora kind of collects ladies, as we'll find out. And
weird, the killer does too.
Hey, she's brooding and drinking. And when her assistant tries to not bring her another drink, she says, my liver is going to explode anyway.
Wow. I mean, same.
Jeffrey's like, mine exploded right now.
I mean, what month of quarantine are we on now?
Exactly. Yeah. So Tony has a brilliant idea. He wants to have a photo shoot on a movie set, or a TV studio set or something. So he and Gloria go on a little field trip, and then they step into a Luigi Cozzi movie. You get a little cozy. Man, as soon as I saw that spaceship, I was like, okay, this has got to be Luigi Cozzi because there's not enough little doodads and little tiny things on this ship to be freaking Antonio Margheriti. Because Antonio Margheriti, he loved to do all the little details on the things he made. So this was not his work, but I could just see frickin' Luigi Cozzi getting all up in this.
When Joe Spinell stepped out in a cape, I knew it was Luigi Cozzi.
Man, that is a movie that lived up to all of the hype and exceeded it. Frickin' Star Crash. Holy shit. Yeah,
this is a good one.
So while they're hanging out, she agrees to shoot, do a photo shoot here. And Tony gets all excited and runs off to go make the details happen or blah-bitty-blah, whatever people do in the movies. She gets scared by some zombies. And one of the zombies jokes, hey, she really wants to be scared. She should see you without your makeup. And that actually ended their friendship. It was very sad. But more importantly, is she sees an old flame, or rather an old flame sees her. And this is Alex, played by 8'9" George Eastman. Okay, he wasn't really 8'9", but he was...
No, he's 8'11".
8 by 50.
I had totally forgotten that George Eastman was in this movie.
Oh, boy.
And I think maybe I missed him in the credits, so when he popped up on screen, I think I screamed.
You're like, yes!
Yeah.
Or you're just terrified. No, he's actually 6'6¾". So he's a very big boy. But he and her had a relationship. And we'll find out that he actually broke up with her because he was scared of commitment. And that's how she ended up meeting Carlo.
We'll find out that he can, in fact, fit in a standard size bathtub.
Oh, boy. I don't think that was anything standard size about anything in that sequence. But we'll talk about that later. They rekindle their flame immediately because this is a giallo. The only thing that would make this more of a giallo is if they were strangers and they hopped into sex this quickly. But they have a little date, and of course, Mark is peeping on them when he goes back to her place, and he's very, very not into this. He's very angry, and I'm going to play the dialogue of them two. Maybe that's what you're laughing about.
I'm laughing about him getting his sniper rifle ready to just murder
Thank
him.
You. Thank you. Oh, my God. It's so creepy. But there's a sexy...
Eastman has a weird line at some point where he describes... Gloria, for reasons I have no context for, as, quote, a very sexy Bo Peep.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Okay, yes, sorry. That is the dialogue I'm going to drop in. This is so great about, like, and yes.
What is the context there? Why is she Bo Peep?
Because he's the wolf.
Oh.
I think he's mixing up some stories.
Yeah. Okay. He's pretty fuzzy.
Come on, Alex, you've got me on pins and needles. What's the proposition? Huh? Am I supposed to believe that a leopard can change his spots?
Yeah, why not? The big bad wolf's been changed into a lamb by a very sexy Bo Peep.
Oh, Alex.
So we're going to cut to a sex scene here. Now, this is one of my favorite sex scenes, and I don't like sex scenes, so this is like the anti-sex scene. Serena Grandi and frickin' George Eastman in a tub full of little bubbles, little bath time play.
Yep.
If you think that this influenced the infamous pool sex scene from Showgirls, you'd be half correct, but this is way actually not as harmful and scary and just perturbing as Showgirls is.
I mean, I would say that this one is less believable.
No, this is hilarious and doesn't make any sense because based on her position, which is face on her back, legs closed, George, bless his heart, Eastman, is humping away at her buttock or lower thigh. Like, they're practicing safe sex because he's not having sex with her.
It is an impossible angle.
Dude.
Unless he's just an elephant trunk. In like a very flexible, like it makes no sense, but they are going at God. It like they are. I mean, the water is making waves.
It's flying, dude.
And
it's
weirdly, this is the cleanest that George Eastman has ever been in a film.
Which is funny because when we first see him, he's dressed like this freaking Nordic warrior, like a Hun or something.
So I mean, good. I love George Eastman, a man who just always looks sweaty.
Yes.
And even in a bath, he's still like dirty in a way.
I adore him. He's such a wonderful man. So As they're making the sex act, the little bro, Tony, he walks in on him and does the, oh, sorry, and then lingeringly stares at his sister nude and this man.
Oh, sorry. I'll just be over here.
No, go on.
George Eastman has a great line afterwards where he's like, no, don't tell me you're upset your little brother saw you boning and didn't immediately run away.
Yes, I'm upset because he tried to hang out. Oh, boy. We cut to a photo shoot at the studio that they showed us with the pillars and the weird lights. It's a beautiful shot. We've got this model and then a couple other models chained to the pillars. And then mummies. We get a bunch of mummies hanging out and ripping this girl's clothes off with more awesome direction from Roberto and Tony.
Ripping them off seems like it's giving the wrong impression. Like, just sort of, you know, dully fumbling at them until they kind of fall off a little.
Oh, boy.
And don't forget the smoke. There's a lot of smoke here, too.
Yes. The whole point of this scene is to introduce Sabrina, this model, played by Sabrina Salerno, who is another sexy lady from the world of Italy.
Sabrina, you are disgusted and excited by these mummies. Sabrina!
Dude, she did not do anything after this. She just... Not, you know, in terms of, like, film, like movies we'd be into, but she was in a lot of, like, freaking TV stuff and modeling stuff. She's, like, quite a famous person, I think.
I don't know. I'm looking at the poster art of a film called Jolly Blue from 1998, and it looks like something I'd be into, so speak
I think it's pronounced Giallo Blue, dude.
Giallo Blue.
No, it's just Jolly. No, she's a very lovely young lady. After the photo shoot, guess what Roberto said when they were done? What he said?
What did he say?
That's a wrap.
That's an unwrapped.
So, Tony, I have figured out after watching this movie like six times over the years that the point of this scene is so that Tony can try to hook up with Sabrina. Just imagine this movie without this scene and the whole thing falls apart. Well, Roberto's super judgy, by the way, about Tony trying to hook up with his model. He's like, meh, doesn't like it. Hmm. It's like, fuck you, Roberto. Tony goes back to her place and he can't get it up for Sabrina. And he's really frustrated and it's like, oh, maybe I'm working too hard. And he tries to leave and she won't let him leave. And she says, I never leave a man unhappy. How understanding is that's like the most understanding. That's like the most happy sequence I've ever seen in a film where there was erectile dysfunction. Like he doesn't overreact and get violent. She doesn't make fun of him. I don't look at it as like a reflection on my own problems and start weeping. Hello?
I mean, I feel what you're saying, but then I also say, isn't the happiest moment in film the fog mummy scene?
That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. I actually have textile dysfunction.
Textile.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's when you use Google Translate poorly.
That's why we started the episode with what we did.
There's a whole new way it moves today. Places to go, go, people to see. You got to keep up with your feet. You can keep on moving with Twix. Chocolate caramel satisfaction. Like crispy cookie, gets you back in the action.
There's nothing two sticks a Twix can't fix.
Yeah, Twix keeps your motor humming while you yum, yum, yum.
Keep on moving with Twix. Caramel or peanut butter Twix.
Gloria is calling Yugoslavia because that's where good old George Eastman, a.k.a. Alex, is supposed to be filming this movie. And she can't get a hold of him. She's very upset. But then, more importantly than that, the killer...
The bees!
Comes after our pal Sabrina with the bees. The killer shows up in a bee costume. I mean, I wish. No, a beekeeper's costume.
Oh my god, it would be so cute if it was if he looked like Jerry Seinfeld bee movie.
You've seen that clip where they every time the trailer says the word bee, they speed the movie up by double.
No. Oh, I might have seen that.
Yeah. Or maybe they slow it down by half. I forget. It's very funny. Basically, I remember no details of the joke. You're welcome.
I mean, so I've only seen this movie once before.
Oh, really?
This time. Yeah. Mm. So when I saw this again and I saw the killer, I was like, so is that a fencing outfit or a beekeeper outfit? I feel like it could go either way.
It's a little bulky for fencing.
Exactly.
Because I'm obviously a fencing expert, as you know.
Fencing expert. I'm a bee expert.
You're a bee
expert. And what I would tell you is that, yes, that many bees could fit into a box of that size. That is correct.
Oh, my God. So this is so great. The killer locks the house down and then closes all the shutters so she can't open the windows. And then who could it be? Is it a woman? Spoilers. Releases the bees, and she immediately starts screaming, "Not the bees! Not the bees! You bitches! This won't bring back your goddamn honey!" You know.
So part of the problem was that she had dabbed on some perfume that I think is like, was it like flower scented or something?
Yes.
But I like to imagine it was just pure honey that she was just rubbing into her skin.
And of course, they couldn't afford something akin to that awesome eyeball effect.
Yeah.
So they gave her this ridiculous bee head to wear over her head. And it could be a bee or a fly or a dragonfly head. It's so cheesy, and I love it. And then when she starts getting stung, she falls on the ground. She's, by the way, of course, what goes without saying, she's completely naked in this whole sequence. It's ridiculous. So the killer then decides to add insult to injury, follows her into her bathroom, and pours bee urine or something all over her, because it doesn't look like honey.
No, but I mean, head cannon, we can say it's honey.
I just said BP.
BP. She puts he puts the BP all like over her butt and stuff, and then her butt gets stung to death.
And then they show these poor bees stuck to her butt, and I'm like, oh no. Is this why we have a problem with the environment, because of all the bees were killed making this movie?
I mean, yeah, this is where the bees disappear to.
Yep,
they all went to Italy, and then they all died on a butt. But my favorite is that when it cuts to this, back to the Pussycat offices, where they are once again considering the latest issue, which is the mummy photo shoot. So that's on the cover, and it's like the blandest photo possible for the cover, not atmospheric or moody at all.
Nope.
And someone is just, one of the like editors is just drawing with like a Sharpie question marks next to the mummy's heads in close up. It's so funny. It's like, mummies?
Mm. Oh my God. That is amazing. So killer poses her for the pictures. And then Inspector Corsi is, I think he's on the phone with Gloria, and she's like, the killer is trying to send me a message. And the killer is like, you're not the target. These models are. What are you worried about? Like, he totally discounts that the killer is literally placing her in front, behind the dead body. It's so funny. Like,
that's incidental.
Dude, why you worry? We have Evelyn and Gloria discussing who might be the killer. They begin to suspect Roberto because those photos, those infamous photos of her, were supposed to have been lost or destroyed. And they're like, yo, man, you were the one who had the pictures. What's up with that? I thought you had them. And he's like, okay, here's the thing. And this is the exact line. He says, I had a couple of kids over, and I immediately said, ew, what are you talking about? So I guess Roberto has some questionable tastes, it's intimated, and one of these kids robbed him and stole the photos. So these precious photos of Gloria could be anywhere. They could be anyone is using them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into Roberto's love life. That's all I'm saying. Doesn't sound right. Then Gloria has the dream. The glowing dildo dream with Mark. This is the most bonkers thing. I think this is like, Lembava's made some sleazy stuff. There's a little movie he made in the 2000s called The Torturer, which I don't know if you've seen any screenshots from.
No, thank you.
No, thanks. He also has a certain scene where the killer in You'll Die at Midnight does a certain thing to a woman's nether regions. It's implied, but it's horrific. So, of course, why wouldn't he have Mark running around, not in a wheelchair, menacing Gloria with a big glowing dildo object? It is insane.
I mean, my favorite part about this is that, you know, as I've mentioned before, Mark literally looks like Richard Ramirez, and now here he is, night stalking, breaking into Julia's house.
He missed his opportunity to play that. He's too old now. He'll play old Richard Ramirez in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So we find out that Mark, the next day, Mark is visiting with his doctor, who tells him, oh, you know, your handicap is imagined. It's all in your head. It's psychosomatic. And he's like, you're telling me I'm crazy? Because, of course, he has in a car accident and his fiance died and he's never recovered from it fully. Very important. Wow, let me tell you. I wrote too many notes. So
I have a good bit of Eastman dialogue from he pops into
the sauna
and he says, bum, 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 the only thing warm in here is the sauna.
Oh, wah, boy. Wah, wah. He's trying to make up with Gloria for not being there when she needed him and not being able to get him on the phone. It's totally ridiculous. I thank you for getting that line. And then Flora and her friend, who's just in lingerie, are watching Gloria's quote-unquote blue movie that she did, where she's being stripped of her clothes by a bunch of soldiers or something. I don't know. It seems like a Tinto Brass movie. I don't know.
Everybody has their kinks.
Oh, my God. So Gloria's, like, been thinking about this magazine and all the shit that's going on, and she's like, Let's sell this shit. She's done. She wants to get rid of this magazine.
This is going to sound so much better after I edit it, bro.
We get the big grave scene where Gloria goes to visit Carlo's grave. And very intimidating. This is like the most chilling scene ever. Someone has taken a picture of Gloria and taped it to the empty tomb next to Carlo's. Man, that shit freaked me out. I could not sleep after watching that.
Hmm.
We get lots of crazy music and someone's running through this cemetery, but then it's just Mark, like, wheelchairing real fast, and he's there visiting his dead fiance's grave. I think I could have skipped this whole sequence for you guys at home. I thought there was more to it. So next we cut to Gloria and Tony at the department store.
JCPenney's.
And they act like they are the kinds of rich people who have someone do the shopping for them, because Gloria is like, this place is so beautiful. And they meet up with Susan, who works at the store, is a friend of Tony, and she's explaining all the floors like this was freaking Are You Being Served? Like, and here's the men's department. What's over there? That's the children's department. Wow, men's clothes are so fashionable now. Blah, 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 blah.
This department store looks exactly what my JCPenney looks like today, which is currently on a closeout sale because they're out of business.
It is so trashy. Like, I always remember this sequence as being in a big flashy mall. No, it is totally in a JCPenney's. The only thing they have is like a nice chandelier that really impresses Gloria. Like, she is totally freaking like head exploding over this place. It's so cute. Mm-hmm. And her ideas are that she's going to go back to modeling. So she's trying to pick out outfits. So she has all these ideas. Like, what if I wore this ski jacket and nothing else? What if I was on skis and I was completely nude? Or what if I was being modest and put on a scarf? And I'm like, what? What is happening? Oh, boy. Then she gets separated from Tony and Susan, and they disappear. And then all of a sudden, a witch flies over. I hear you, you witch.
That was so good.
All of a sudden, freaking Tony's corpse comes rolling on up the escalator. covered in blood.
Joya's like, Tony, you should have tied your shoes. I'm always telling you.
That kid is back on the escalator again. Folks, Kevin Smith's Mallrats, you're welcome.
You are so welcome.
I am a lame-o. So anyway.
No, I got a Mallrats sidebar.
Yes,
Mallrats is a good movie, right? It's good. I enjoy it still. I watched it again recently. But I, for the first time, watched the director's cut of it.
I did not know there was one.
That's the crazy thing. For some reason, it has the most, honestly, the strangest opening sequence I've ever seen in a film. It's just like 5 minutes of prologue that adds, I mean, I guess it helps explain some things about the movie. It has like a totally different tone. It's so weird. I feel like this is worth noting, just not in the context of this movie, but just generally speaking, because it's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in film.
I think I've seen some deleted scenes. Maybe that was just like stuff from the before he made the director's cut.
It's so weird. Honestly, this I think the director's cut is like only this like opening scene.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know, it's so weird. Miramax is not known for like making wise decisions with how films should be cut, but I think they made the right choice this case.
Dude, it sounds like it. So in this mall, after she finds Tony's corpse, the killer is taunting her with this high-pitched voice. And I don't know about you, but I was waiting for him to start quacking like a duck.
Yeah, he's sucking on that helium. He's giggling. Oh, you go,
it's so obnoxious. Yeah. She freaks out, of course, and she gets on the elevator. We get lots of gel lighting. We get freaking mannequins. Oh, man. We get Gloria deciding to arm herself with, it's not really a fire axe. It's more of a fire hatchet. But she's ready to freaking tear shit up. She finds the corpse of Susan, and then the heavy metal music is going.
Mm.
And I was like, dude, this is so Argento of this era. He would have had inappropriate heavy metal like in frickin' opera.
There is a mannequin that falls between floors and smashes, and for a second I thought it was Gloria. I thought, you know, she, as so often happens in these films, she just turned into a mannequin as she fell. But when she broke apart, her face breaks apart, and you recognize that it is in fact a mannequin, it looks a lot like the Spasmo poster.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. Nice
good
connection.
Call.
Reference. Like, yeah.
So she gets away. She looks very relieved to be out of there, relieved to leave her brother's corpse behind. And then we cut to the killer. He has the pile of dead folks. He's got Tony, and he's got the Susan character piled on the couch in front of the picture. And then he grabs the bread and butter of Lambava's frickin' filmography. He picks up a box cutter.
The Mo Lambava, Mo Better.
Folks, if you're under the impression that good old Lambava co-directed and maybe did a lot more directing on Mario Bava's Shock, because, you know, Mario Bava was very ill at the time, maybe Lambava had some say in there because there's a big old frickin' box cutter that flying box cutter in that movie. Then you get the box cutter featured prominently in A Blade in the Dark. What is with this guy in box cutters? So he slashes the photo of Gioia, or Gloria, Gioia. And then the next morning, we get Gloria. She's recovering from sedation. And she says my favorite line that's a frickin' something gives you hope in these troubled times, folks. She says, I have to go on living. And Evelyn's like, do you though? No, she doesn't say that. But Evelyn finds more pics in the frickin' mail. She finds the pictures of Tony and Susan dead, and she takes off in her car. And right when she's about to pull out of the frickin' driveway, she finds the corpse of Susan in her car, and she screams. And then we have beautiful frickin' Gloria calling Alex to ask when he'll be in Rome, and he's such a good frickin' sleazoid. Just to add to his red herringness, he's in front of the Colosseum. Yeah, dude. Oh, man, Yugoslavia, it sucks, right? She's probably like, why is the connection so good between our two countries? Roberto, he finally figures out something. He finds a bunch of these mysterious photos in his studio, and then he finds the pull-down screen with the photos of Gloria, and he freaks out and runs to go tell. And there's a rebel flag in the studio. Did you notice?
No. What?
On yes, I swear
Why?
To God.
Why?
On the metal stairs, the frickin' the winding staircase, at the top of the stairs, there's just a big old rebel flag.
What the
Stars and Stripes, man.
Jesus.
Oh boy. So after he leaves, the cops show up and they find the backdrop, so then they call and get Gloria all freaked out, and so she doesn't trust Roberto. Even though Roberto has some key information here, he shows up, she freaks out, won't let him come near her. She runs out, he follows her across the street, boom, he gets hit by a car, the car takes off, hit and run. And so
we have
now
a
we
great
think,
line at some point where somebody oh. says, Roberto obviously must have hated women.
he had serious issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Roberto dies in her arms, and we cut to Mark calling Gloria, and he asks her, how does it feel to be surrounded by death? And she screams at him, stop calling, you fool! Which I love that. After this, we see Mark can walk. He gets up out of the freaking wheelchair and just walks across the room. We're like, oh, Mark's not being truthfulness. Flora finally gets what she wants. Gloria agrees to sell her the pussycat, but she also gives her the claws, Jeffrey. So catty. She's like, if you weren't such an asshole, I would have sold you for your original asking price, but because you're a dick, now you own it at like way more expensive. And Flora's like, oh, touche. So after she sells the magazine, she gets dissed. Gloria gets dissed and ditched by her best pal, Evelyn. Evelyn just leaves her a letter like, bye, bitch, because she's like, I work for you. I don't work for the magazine. Goodbye. Like, wait, I just sold the magazine, you idiot. Mm-hmm. You can still work for me, you fuck. So the killer's dead. Everything's happy, except this shit ain't over, y'all. In the
it's
house.
Never over.
No, this movie, according to my notes, it is never over.
Never.
Gloria finds a slashed picture of herself. She's like, oh, no. Then she goes outside and she finds that Tony's a floater in the pool. So Tony's corpse
Tony,
is floating.
Tony, what did I tell you about the pools? You got to watch out for the sides. You'll bump your head.
Get the skimmer. Tony's in the pool again.
Put your floaties on.
Oh, God. He has that inflatable whale. It's so cute. She starts to put the pieces together. She starts remembering all of these important clues, you know, quote unquote important. And then we hear the tape recorder going, we see the tape recorder going, and we hear that high-pitched voice again. And dun dun dun, it's Tony in a blonde wig and Joker makeup. This was his big freaking moment where he was going to audition for what's his name? Tim Burton?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gonna beat out Jack Nicholson for the part of the Joker.
Oh sure, he came into the audition like, "Hey, I'm the Joker, baby.
I'm a Joker, baby. So why don't you kill me?"
And then she does.
This look on Tony is so ridiculous. Like, it's just, he just looks crazy balls. I kind of like it because he's wet from the pool and his makeup's running. But it's like, wait, was that his makeup when he was pretending to be dead? Or was that the makeup he was always wearing when he was dressed as the killer? I'm confused. I like it.
I mean, it's like in films and TV shows where sometimes actors wake up with like a full face of makeup and you're like, you didn't sleep in that. But he died in this makeup and woke up like that. That's even less believable.
Hey, when he put on that wig, he was asserting himself. He said, baby, I was born this way.
What's the matter? Don't you like me? Don't you like me? Oh, no. I haven't become a transvestite. I'm not even very good at that.
But why, Tony? But why?
You should know, Gloria. You're the only one I love. I've always loved you. Since we were kids.
He tells her that he hasn't become a transvestite, which I love. But then he pulls out a knife and he starts threatening her. And we find out his motivation is that he loves her. And he was trying to protect her from all these evil people. But of course, his love is incestuous creepiness because he immediately starts threatening her and starts cutting her clothes off because he wants to see her naked one more time, which is what everyone who's watching this movie is saying. Like, we've only seen her naked 58 times in this movie.
One more time.
And
gotta celebrate.
Oh boy. This is definitely a joyous noise. When he starts cutting her freaking clothes off, her brassiere, and he starts talking about the valley between her rose-capped hills. Like, he full-on starts reading out of an old romance novel, dude. It's so terrifying. So she's calling to Mark, like, Mark, help me out here, bro. So, and of course, he's not in his normal spot on the window because Mark, with that rifle that he showed earlier, he shoots Tony in the dick, which is awesome because Tony spits up blood.
Oh my
because
god!
Everyone,
like...
everyone knows that the dick blood is in your lungs and your stomach.
Well,
so.
Listen, if it's not rushing there, it's rushing somewhere. It's got to get out. So yeah, he barfs blood, and it lingers so long on this shot of him just like barfing up this blood onto her belly. It's good. It's real good.
Hey, this movie, subtle, super subtle, lots of depth, you know, lots of meaning behind it, but
as classy as an issue of Pussycat magazine.
Rare. So we look up the hill above the pool area there, and there's Tony in his wheelchair with the rifle, like, yeah, like doing like the almost like he just kicked the goal at it, like a kid's soccer game. He's just so happy that he shot this guy in the dick. So we cut to the hospital where Gloria is recovering. We find out that her brother survived, but he may never walk again because, as everyone knows, when you get shot in the dick, you can never walk again.
Yep.
That's what dicks are for.
They call it the third leg.
How did you make that joke? We're topsy-turvy on the Doom Show. But she immediately has a dream sequence, as we've been doing, where her evil brother is rolling in, looking all pale and ashen, and he's coming to kill her. He's got some roses. He's going to kill her with kindness. But she wakes up, and it's just Mark.
Yep, just the old Night Stalker.
The other creeper in her life. Right?
We have a moment where he's just like, hey, you don't go forgetting me now. And then they're just like laughing and it freeze frames with no cat eyes, which is very disappointing. but you know, a good bon voyage pervert. I won't forget you.
And I wonder if that's like her signature thing, because he says, don't you go forgetting me. And she kisses her index finger and like waves to him like la la, and I'm like, dude, that was so weirdly perfect of a moment. Yeah. I'm like wondering if that was like Serena Grandi's signature thing when she like signed off or something. That was what she did at the end of her pornos. I don't know.
I mean, I was expecting her to walk away from the hospital, raise one fist in the air, and then freeze frame while Simple Minds are playing.
Oh my god, that would have been beautiful. So yeah, this was shot by Gian Lorenzo Battaglia, which is like five or six names. He is a cinematographer on good old Demons and Demons 2, Miami Golem, You'll Die at Midnight, Witchery.
Don't forget that he is camera and electrical department on Popeye. That's important.
Oh boy. Man, that movie. That's one of my childhood movies that I have not been brave enough to revisit.
Do it.
Oh boy. He was also camera and electrical equipment boy. He's best camera and electrical equipment man on good old Screamers and a Ruggiero Deodato movie that I would probably never in my right mind watch again, called Waves of Lust, which is one of those, hey, let's have like really few characters and like most of them are rapists, and it's a sexy movie. Yeah, and Richard wonders why he spent $25 on this imported Italian DVD.
All made mistakes.
We've all made mistakes. Let's see, what else is exciting about this movie? I watched a tiny bit. I was a bad Doom Show man and just watched a little bit of the interview with Lamberto Bava on the old Media Blasters disc, because of course I have the Shriek Show disc. I watched a little bit of the interview with him where he was explaining Serena Grandi to the people interviewing him and like her career and what she was like and how they tried to write a movie around her to kind of play to her strengths, which is why there's so many sexy parts in it and everything. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to finish this later. And then here we are recording. So I didn't do that.
Yep.
It happens. Sometimes you don't do your due diligence.
You don't do the doomed.
No, I am doomed. That's the problem.
Yeah.
We talked about all of the beautiful people. The beautiful people. The beautiful people. The beautiful people. Jeffrey, how do you like this one?
I like this one. It's not a favorite. You know, the fact that I'd only seen it once before now, I think speaks to that. I think that when we originally talked about it, I was like, oh, do I really want to do Delirium? Like, it's okay, right? But then I was thinking about how the fact that we did the other movie called Delirium.
That's
so
right.
So we got to do this one too. I do like this movie. It's got enough of those very idiosyncratic moments for me to stan it, as the kids say.
Oh, no.
We actually skipped over one of my favorite moments, which is a Roberto moment. It's such a small moment. I mean, it's honestly nothing that one would even note, except I guess I'm not one. It's at that dinner scene after the I would have taken my panties off joke, yes, where Roberto gives Gloria a gift, and it's this little like box that he shakes, and then some like shitty like paper plastic flowers pop out of it.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That just look like absolute shit, and then he just hands it to Gloria, and it's like, here, you throw this out. That's, I feel like, as nice a summation of the film that I can come up with, which is like, it's kind of a little box full of shit, but it looks pretty and I'll hold it for a little bit before I throw it out. I do like it, but yeah, it's, I feel like it's got all the right components. It gets a little dull in the second half of it where my attention sort of flags. Ooh. Not enough George Eastman, not enough Daria Nicolodi, just about enough Richard Ramirez, but you know, you want to keep that. A few more of the sort of surreal makeup effect things could have been good, because we really only get the two, right? It's just not.
Yeah, they couldn't afford to keep going with that.
Because I feel like that's the interesting hook that kind of sets it apart.
Yeah.
So I wish it did a little bit more of that, but it's definitely a good one. I like it. How do you feel?
Adding to that, I did remember one other thing. Lambaba did say that this was like one of his bigger budgets, which is sounds insane to me, and that it was one of his more fully realized films from this
That's
era.
Insane.
And I'm like, what? So
this is the year after he made, I mean, just 2 years after he made Demons, so, and then Demons 2. What?
I think he was looking back on things with rose-colored glasses.
Yeah, weird.
As for me, I love this film. This is not top 10, top 20. This might not even be top 30 giallo material for me, but it's just something about it. It has this energy. I don't get bored in that second half. I just think it's just all wonderful. In, here comes the plug, Giallo Meltdown, a Movie-Thon Diary, available now. I actually saved this for the last chapter. Every time I was building a playlist for a Giallo movie-thon, I kept putting this one off because it was so important to save this bonkers-ass movie for near the end of the book. And sure enough, it's one of like the last two or last three movies I actually covered. And I wrote in my notes, highly recommended for those with cheese in their veins. Which I think that was just too personal of a reveal for me.
Yeah. And all that easy cheese spill coursing through.
I love the score, as we talked about. It has that piece of music in it that sounds just like one of those, that film mirage, that piece of music we kept running into over and over and over. I think Simon Boswell just made this piece of music and just said, I don't care what you do with it, or no one even asked him. They just kept reusing it. It's that atmospheric part. It doesn't have any, like, it doesn't have any drums or anything. It's just a real ethereal piece of mystery music. And we've heard it in, like, a dozen films. And if it's not the same piece of music, it is somebody copied Boswell or what. It's so funny. Yeah, it's in this movie. I love it. But yeah, dude, no, thank you to Mark for requesting this thing and helping the show out. We hope you still like us. I mean, you didn't like us before. I'm sorry to presume that.
Mark, caress us, Mark. Act like you love it. And laugh. Keep laughing. Please. Remember, you want to be possessed, Mark. Make it sexier, Mark. Surrender to pleasure.
Mark, if you play your cards right, I'll let you see the valley between my rose-capped hills.
Richard, you're so provincial.
Hey, I know about the blue movies you did.
Well, you know, I would have taken my panties off.
It was just like 200 kilometers. We didn't even talk about Flora, like, being mad that she couldn't seduce Gloria. Like, that was a whole thing, too. Oh, yeah. See, Jeffrey, another couple viewings, at least four more viewings, and you're going to be hooked on this thing. I'm telling
you. All right. Give me time. Give me time.
Well, thank you, sir, for being on the show.
You're welcome.
And folks, good night, and be sure to watch out for your bee heads and your BP. And we're done.
Hello, This Is the Doom Show is a proud member of the Legion Podcast Network. Please check out the other podcasts on legionpodcasts.com. If you'd like more Hello, This Is the Doom Show, go to hellodoomshow.podomatic.com or go to doomedmoviethon.com for the archives. If that's still not enough, go to @doomedmoviethon on Twitter. You can write in to Hello, This Is the Doom Show. Use the email doomedmoviethon@gmail.com. Doom Show episodes are available on record and 8-track cassette.